House Committee on Labor, Subcommittee on Public Employees Retirement, Work Session on House Bill 2569-2049, Public Hearing and Possible Work Session on House Bill 2841 and 2842. It's May 2nd, 1989, 3 p.m. in room 137.
Labor Committee this afternoon, and I'm going to have to run out of here and vote on, of all things, a barbering bill. Believe that? That's no kidding. It has to do with it has to do with cosmetology and whatever, the number of hours taken and or whatever. And one of the guys that testified before the education committee on this bill said he was somewhat nervous, and I said he wasn't as nervous as the barber that cut my hair Saturday. She kept making mistakes, and this is finally what I finally ended up with. All right, we're gonna have a work session on public hearing
work session
yeah work session on House Bill 2049 to start with. I think that's a relatively innocuous bill with no real problems, and House Bill then we'll go to House Bill 2569 immediately after that, and then we'll pick up the last two bills. We will finish the agenda today. House Bill 2049 is the omnibus bill that has been pre-session filed at the request of the PERS board. And what do we have in the way of sign-ups, anything? Are we going to have just the PERS people here?
PERS, if we need them.
Here's your sheet.
Right. Right, if we need them. Is there anybody here that...
I can go through the bill if you need.
Representative Walden, we just went into work session on the omnibus bill from PERS, House Bill 2049. Right. Why don't we do this? Let's deal with the amendments first, and then any public testimony that anybody wants to offer us, hopefully not too much, we'll deal with the bill as amended. So
whose amendments are these?
I'll tell you if I go through.
Well, yeah.
We don't have dash one amendment. It didn't exist.
2049-1 is right here in my hand.
Dash
you didn't have it?
You should have dash
oh,
one.
Here it is. I got it.
Good
got
Lord,
it.
Yes.
Dash deal. One, two, three, and four.
Dash, I'll deal with dash one. dash one is my amendment. And it doesn't deal with a very large group of people, but it just happens that I'm one of the people that it deals with. Currently, and the committee will note that we dealt with a SEBB situation regarding retirees' medical coverage, dental coverage, and so forth, and just last week, I believe that was, where you know, they were saying that their rates were higher than the whatever we required the state to include them at the rate that the rest of the employees in the state system are paying, and with no large deductible at the beginning and so forth. Well, to explain to the committee and to the audience, currently members of the Legislative Assembly are allowed to retire while in office. We are the only public employees that can retire while we're still public employees and continue to be public employees. Senator Roberts is currently retired and is not, and the state pays no PERS employer's rate on him, nor do they pick up his share because he's retired in office. The reason for that is that there are public employees that have substantial PERS time, and they may wish, if when they hit retirement age, to retire and stay in the legislature. So there's a special law that says that they may do that. And Senator Roberts is currently doing that, and I have the opportunity to do that in September when I'm 58. And I can retire, and I have 22 years or something like that in the system. However, there is a problem, and the problem is this. The law says that a state employee, when they retire, has 60 days to opt into group coverage under SEBB. All right? So if a legislator retires while in office, they have 60 days to opt in to the start paying their SEBB individual rate as a retiree. Well, a state legislator gets coverage free, so why would they want to start paying cash for something that is a part of their fringe benefit package? So what this amendment says is that if a legislator retires while in office, they can wait till the end of their legislative tenure, when they are no longer going to be in the legislature, to make that option. That's what this amendment says. That's all it says. It's a bit self-serving, but I think since we are, can't call us bastards, but I mean, that's...
not on the official record.
A lot of people do, though. That, in effect, is what we really are, because we're animals that are not of the norm in the system. But yeah, it's on tape, right. Don't worry, that's not as bad as other things that I've said that are on tape. At any rate, the committee understands. I've talked to others that are in a category where they have substantial PERS time prior coming to the legislature, Representative Cease, Representative Hostica, who are professors at Portland State and the University of Oregon, and they agree that something needs to be done in this particular area because it is a slight problem. So anyway, that's the Dash 1 amendments.
Chair, I'd move the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Domini moves the Dash 1 amendments. Is there any problem with the Dash 1 amendments? Hearing none, so amended. Now, tell us what we have in the Dash 2 amendments.
Right.
Max.
The Dash 2 amendments are actually submitted by Representative Domini.
Right.
And I'll give you the rationale. And
this is the bill 9-3-2. Okay.
One time I had. Do you have the cover letter?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't.
This is the hottest room in the whole building. You know what?
Here, there. Here's a cover letter.
Okay. Do you want to address or do you want me to?
I'll let you. Started.
If you'll turn to 20 of the printed bill. Page 20, after
Section 12.
Line 17, what?
Section 12.
Yeah, it's actually Section 12 of the bill. This has to do with eligible people, eligible for the purposes of the retirement
Medicare.
Allowance for the Medicare funding.
That's $50 a month currently.
That's correct. And this would say that qualifying service means creditable years of service in the system and any periods of employment with an employer participating in the system required of the employee before becoming a member of the system. And then says, as an addendum, amendments to this 327 by Section 12 of this Act shall apply to all members of the public employee's retirement system without regard to whether they retire before, on, or after the effective date of this Act. As I understand it, these amendments were proposed on behalf of the United Seniors and I'm not aware of specifically what the problem was that they were trying to address.
Mr. Chair, as I recall it, they wanted to assure that they could count all of their service, and that's basically what this loop that wherever their service was at.
What service? I mean,
anything under the PERS system is the idea.
Well,
be able to count all of their service. Well, maybe
you have it.
People out there are saying I'm saying it wrong.
This says before being a member of this.
That was my understanding.
Mr. Andrews from the PERS.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Committee. I'm Bob Andrews, PERS, manager of our membership and coverage section. I think the intent, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dominey, that they were looking for in here is, as you say, all service, all employment in a qualifying position rather than all membership, remembering that first 6 months of employment in a qualifying position we call now waiting time, used to be called probationary time. When we use the term credible service, that 6 months is carved out of there. So they would actually need 8.5 years of creditable or of employment in order to meet the 8-year creditable.
Yes. All right.
Now
we're doing is saying right now in order to qualify for Medicare, it takes 8 years of what's the word?
Creditable
service, meaning membership.
Creditable service.
That period during which contributions are
right.
taken from salary during, and sent into us or paid on behalf
and
of.
During, and when, if you have 6 months of probationary time that you can buy back at retirement, that doesn't do it, apparently, under the statute. And we need to fix that glitch and count the 6 months that you served as probationary time, or even maybe two. I have two probationaries.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, for the people that are, I think, are concerned here, they would not have satisfied the qualifier for purchasing that waiting time, which requires 10 years of service. So
gotcha.
That's why they're short. There's nothing they can purchase to come up with that.
Okay.
They cannot purchase.
What we're doing is allowing them to count for purposes of the Medicare supplement the 6 month probationary or 6 month probationary periods, period or periods.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, to qualify for the $50 subsidy,
right,
which has been.
So we've got 8 years as a requirement to get the $50 subsidy, which kicks in at age 65, or if you're disabled.
And eligible for Medicare,
and
correct, sir.
Eligible for Medicare. The requirement is 8 years of creditable service. We're saying that the creditable service counts any probationary period or periods. So we're saying
contrary, if I may, it creditable service would be only those periods during which contributions were remitted to us on behalf for wages paid.
Okay.
So it would not include the 6 month waiting period.
But this bill does include the 6 months.
By changing it to the qualifying service, then it would include the 6 months.
Okay, that's what it is.
And I might.
I have no problem with that because they were actually public employees during that period of time.
I might add that. There's going to be legislation introduced to amend this statute to correct the problem that of the $50 and who funds that particular benefit. And we will have to flag that bill as it comes out to see how this fits with it.
Just a minute. In case I have to carry the bill.
What sort of fiscal impact would this change have, if any?
Well, it only, Representative Walden, it only affects those people who have between 7.5 months and eight years, but just short of 8 years, without counting their 6 month probationary period. And I guess that's not very many people, is it?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we're estimating that that's probably in the neighborhood of about 700 people out there as the bill is before you by just changing that. There's an estimate, the fiscal impact on another piece of legislation which is addressing this particular type of thing that is suggesting that the cost to the fund could be in the neighborhood of $780,000 to $840,000 in a biennium, and that translates to approximately 700 people in that universe.
Legislators aren't covered by that probationary period, are they?
I do not remember.
I'm sure they're
I do not remember.
Not. I'm sure of that. Representative Walden, this was Representative Phillips' requirement, that 8-year requirement. And I think that he, you can ask him, but I think his intent was 8 years as a public employee. And that's not what the law says. It says 8 years on which your employer contributed. And the first 6 months you were in probationary, so you didn't get it. And that's where we are.
I'd have to do some homework, Mr. Chairman, to answer your question on legislators. I do not remember at this
point. Well, it doesn't really that important. Okay. I just wondered if they were. It ran through my mind.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash to amendment.
Representative Dominey moves the dash to amendment. Further discussion? Any objection? So amended. Now we're dealing with HB 2049-3.
The Dash 3 amendments were proposed initially when the former director first came in front of the committee. This has to do I'm wrong. Dash 3 came from the PERS.
It deals with aliens on a training or educational visa that are apparently working in public employees as public employees or something, or being paid. You know, Bob?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, what we're doing is trying to clean up the intent of this is to continue, we've worked with the Department of Higher Education, et cetera, to continue a student exclusion when the individual is working for a school, higher ed, community college, public schools, that are principally there as a student, whether full or part-time. And we want to preserve that one, and we give some clarifier that the intent of that individual to be there is as a student. Now, if they are already employed and just happen to be going, then the qualification wouldn't there. Then we've asked to add in this no alien that would be working for any participating employer. There are certain funded grants where people can come into the United States on a training program and work for an employer. Port of Portland, for example, sir, was one of the first that came to our attention. And these grants have a limitation as to the amount of money that an individual can have in the way of a stipend. They're not excluded from PERS as the law currently is. So by the employer having to pay the 6% into PERS, they've exceeded the limitations of the stipend that are provided for in these international treaties. Mm-hmm. So this is saying that an alien on a training or an educational visa working for any participating employer is excluded. That satisfies the need of the alien, satisfies the need of the employer.
Okay. From the PERS system.
From the PERS system.
From the PERS.
If you'll notice that in the bill, page 3, is essentially what they proposed initially. What they've done with the Dash 3 amendments is cleaned up their language, as I understand it, trying to get it in the right places to do what you wanted it to do.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3.
Representative Downey moves the Dash 3. Further discussion on Dash 3? Hearing none, is there any objection to Dash 3? Dash 3 have been, House Bill 2049 has been amended by Dash 3. What else have we got?
Dash 4. Dash 4 amendments were first proposed by the former director when she first came and talked about 2049.
Mm-hmm.
Has to do with people who are working in systems of higher education who have different different pension benefits. and would allow an employer to pick up, assume, or pay the full amount of contributions which would otherwise have been made by an employer assisted under the other form. There may be someone here from higher education or University of Oregon that will, may want to address these, and many of you, Mr. Matthews, might want to address them, either one.
If we have no representative, Mr. Chair, from higher ed, I think I understand. I'll make an attempt.
Wait, do you have something?
Yes.
Is Elizabeth here?
All right.
Hi, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Elizabeth Dickinson from higher education.
What have we got in 2049-4, Elizabeth?
The basic situation we have, Mr. Chairman, is that we have, since 1979, essentially been picking up the employee contribution to TIAA-CREF is primarily the annuity that, for those faculty who elect to choose it. And essentially, we've been advised by the Attorney General that we ought to get behind the statute.
Mr. Chair.
I think that's a good idea.
Mr. Chair, if I understand this, they're already doing it, and they just want to make it legal. Is that it?
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's essentially the thrust of the amendments is to make, from what I understand, they're already making those contributions, and this would give them the authority to do so.
Yeah, it's too bad we can't take everything that people are already doing and make it legal by an amendment. Isn't that true?
What can we say?
Mr. Chair, I might go ahead and move there.
Okay, Representative Dominey moves 2049-4, which is something that they're already doing and we're making it legal. Is there any objection to that? All right, fine. We have amended and accepted the Dash 4 amendments. The Dash 4 amendments, Representative Walden, is something that they're already doing and we are saying okay. Higher ed.
Okay.
Okay, now, I think at this point, thank you, Elizabeth.
It's the law, anyway.
Max and Bob, if you guys, if we can just run through this bill quickly, hitting the high spots so we know what we're up to here.
All right. If you'll turn to page 3, lines, and if Mr. Matthews is following along, maybe he can correct me anytime I scream something wrong. Lines 19 through 22 are the language about the aliens that we just took an amendment on to change the wording, but addresses that issue that he just addressed.
Okay.
Lines 31.
Yeah, there's some kind of something on
there. Here's the Dash 2 amendments, if you look at, we skip down. That's not, I'm wrong. In the Dash 3 amendments.
Got it.
There's an extra, more than what we just discussed on the aliens. In line, if you look on 7 and 8 of the Dash 3 amendments, lines 31 through 38, restore the bracketed material and delete the boldface material. This is initially was changing the system for volunteer firefighters may apply to board at any time for them to become members of the system. What it was being changed to is to become eligible for a length of service award program and take them out of the system. The problem evidently appeared, the former director asked me to prepare this, to put that, take that language out. The PERS board, as I understand it, was not comfortable with starting a length of service award program for volunteer firefighters. They thought they may have to start doing it for a bunch more people.
Okay.
And in fact, they're not too comfortable with the volunteer firefighters within the system as it is right now. But I wasn't comfortable taking that language totally out. So I wrote the amendment to restore the bracketed material and delete the boldface material to make that the way it was.
So we aren't changing anything
in that section.
I mean, we're leaving subsection 7 alone.
Yeah, that's if you go ahead and take lines 7
All right.
and 8 in the Dash
Fine.
3
Well,
amendment.
We've already done that because we've accepted the Dash 3 amendment.
I understand that, and I missed shooting
All right.
through there.
Go ahead.
Okay. think actually on page 4, we're deleting down at the bottom, lines 40, deleting some language. And then adding some language that should clarify the retiree cost of living adjustments. And they're also payable to the beneficiary of the deceased retiree.
Why are we knocking that one out? I mean, you mean now they don't have to pay the 2% anymore?
It gets put back in under Section 2.
It's put back in under 2.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, I got
just
you.
Just to clarify.
Okay, fine. And then we said that the change on line 6, page 3, is already a fact. PRS is already...
Line 6, page 3?
Yeah, where it deals with up at the top, or the member's beneficiary. I have a note here that says PRS is already doing this, so there's no fiscal impact.
Okay, yes.
Okay.
All right, then down in lines, on page 5, lines 30 and 31, that clarifies that teachers at McLaren and Hillcrest and at the School for Deaf and Blind are treated the same as other teachers with respect to valuing sick leave for retirement purposes.
Okay.
I think the next one's on page 7. And what we've done there is, I think this is a consistency. At any time, on line 29, pardon me, line 29. At any time after establishing membership within 60 days after the date, and it used to be the service retirement allowance becomes normally due, has changed to at 60 days after the date of the first benefit
payment.
Yeah,
that's just housekeeping. Same thing on page 8.
Same thing on page 8.
All right.
And the same thing on middle of page 9, 21 through 23, as I recall, yes.
Yeah.
And then...
That's just consistent.
Consistency.
On page 10, we have a...
What? Chair, on line 36 on page 9, what did this take out?
That's an obsolete provision.
Okay.
Yeah, right to repay before December 31.
Right.
Yeah.
It's to repay before December 1st, 1953.
He is. Some of the members of the committee weren't even born then.
Thank you.
What was the first war line?
In the first war? I was in one.
Odd one.
On page 10. If we're ready to move.
We're ready to get off the wars.
Okay. On page 10, line 27, this standardizes language to prevent administrative costs associated with paying small monthly benefits on the death of a member. To be honest with you, I don't recall what the testimony from the former director was on this one, and if you're concerned about that, we might ask Mr. What?
Well, my question, of course, is the obvious question. If the amount is under $30, how is it paid?
Now, Mr. Chairman, it would be paid in a lump sum, sir, rather than taking it as an annuity payment.
All right.
Okay.
No problem with that. Same thing over on page
11 is just consistent with that one.
Consistency.
Mm-hmm.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, on page 11, lines 41, we have been, as staff, have been struggling with one word in there, and perhaps I can ask for some assistance. So long as the monthly payments plus the monthly payable that we just talked about over here in on line 27 and 28 of page 11, and I think it's meaning one or the other is what the intent is, that neither one, if it's under 30, then it would be paid as a lump sum. Now, if the plus does that, we're okay, but we're reading it that one could be plus and the other one would be less than.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chair, if I understand, I'd move to take out the word plus and put in the word all four.
Is that what you want?
Well, it would.
Does that do it?
I thought that's...
I think... If I may, Mr. Chairman, I believe that if we would take the word payable and change that to the word elected, then it would do what we need it to do in there. If I may, just a little background. This is for a death benefit for what we call an active member, or which you and I are. In that case, whatever is in our account balance in the form of a benefit is matched by a like amount of money from the employer's funds.
Mm-hmm.
And a designated beneficiary may elect to take the whole thing in a lump sum.
I gotcha.
May elect to take all of it as an annuity payment, or may elect to take the member's money as a monthly annuity and the employer's money as one total benefit. What this is trying to say is, as long as those benefits are less than $30 under the member's account,